Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Good evening to all of our admirable friends out there. Thank you for joining us once again on this Tuesday evening. This is Carol.
Hey, this is Buddy.
We're happy to have you here with us tonight. So, Buddy.
Tonight we're going to cover one of my favorite topics, apathy and persistence.
Yeah, this is kind of a bugaboo for me. So, I think we're going to have a little bit of a nice little go around here on persistence and apathy. And
apathy meaning a little bit on the guitar string being a little bit loose.
And I think people appreciate that visual when we go through it. So,
well, it's all about energy and effort. This is persistence, energy and effort. But why don't we, before we get into the body of it, talk about what we're grateful for, as usual.
Absolutely, we're grateful. Well, I'm grateful for many things, and I have one thing that I was gonna, but then I kind of thought about as I was looking out the window. For those of you that don't live where we're broadcasting from, it's raining outside, and there's a terrible storm that went by, and I guess you could look at it one way, thinking of what a inconvenience it is when you drive home and it's pouring rain, but I'm grateful that it was raining because we need it so desperately here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But more so in general, just rain in general, I think it didn't strike me as much as when we were looking for a place to go in July. We were looking to go, I think, to Colorado or New Mexico, someplace up in the mountains that we could go canoeing. And any place that we looked at that had a lake, everybody kept saying, well, the lake levels are down. We're really down.
Yeah.
Or the rivers aren't running.
I noticed that every one of them was down.
And that scared me when I started to hear that.
Precious resource.
It just really struck me as being so scary. And so that's when I thought how grateful I am when I saw the rain clouds just open up. I don't know that it maybe alleviates the suffering of people or farmers around here, but we so desperately need water. How about you?
I'm grateful for health. Health for myself and those around us. We're actually at a point now where everybody's healthy, and family and close, admirable friends. I kind of noticed that's unique. You know, everybody's healthy right now.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. That's something to be grateful for.
It certainly is.
Something I think we take for granted a lot. I know I take it for granted.
I do.
There's always sickness. We're getting older. Especially with my mom and my stepdad. Their health is fine. And what are they, 86 and almost 90 now?
Yeah, well, they're getting up. They're like upper 80s and...
Playing
but they're models of
all the time.
Health, which is really, I just, when I grow up, I want to have their health, I guess.
Yeah, that energy, persistence.
Yes.
Still going.
Yes.
Both of them, still going.
Yes, very much so.
So it's great we're all in good health right now, and we'll enjoy that moment while we are.
Yeah. And I think it would be nice for those that are listening to us too, if they just wanted to take a moment and just kind of reflect on what they're grateful for today, that would be a nice thing to do.
Let's take a moment for that.
Okay. One of our listeners had emailed into you, and I wanted to share this with about gratitude.
Okay.
This particular listener wrote in and said that he had to speak up in front of a group, and usually he uses cards, not so much to read from, but to give little bullets on the high points that he wanted to.
He had a eulogy to do, right?
Was it a eulogy?
Yeah.
Okay. Usually in that kind of case, I think, he said he usually has cards, an index card or something that he usually writes on. And when he got up to speak in front of the group, he realized that he had forgotten the card.
Mm.
Now, I know that if I were in that position, I think I would just like be a heap on the floor. I don't, you know, I'd be, but from the email, he took a deep breath. And he reflected on what he was grateful for, and then he spoke to the group on his gratitude. And he saw that it transformed his words that he was saying, as well as what he was receiving back from the group that he was speaking to. So I think that shows the power of gratitude for sure. I mean, in a situation, that was gratitude in action.
Right. It might have overcome apathy, fear, a multitude of emotions. By just shifting his energy to being grateful and thinking about what's been given to him. That's a wonderful story.
It was a timely email, and I was just appreciative that he shared it with us. I thought that was really just a great thing to do.
Yeah. And in that note, you know, we're going to invite listeners to call in anytime they want to join the conversation. We're going to continue to try to make this a relaxed show.
Okay.
Where we're just talking. So it's not like we have to cover the subject completely. People feel compelled to call. Our producer assures me that he'll let us know when someone calls, and
sure. We'll
interrupt what we're doing. Is that okay, Cal?
That's fine. And it could be merely the fact that someone might have exhibited something or been the recipient of one of the mind qualities that we've been talking about over the last 5 or 6 weeks that don't cover the topic we're doing tonight.
Right.
And if they want to even speak to that, that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, any kind of, example or
we'll continue to have our conversation this evening. And I'd like you tonight, if you would, to do the recap. Would that be all right?
Oh, I'd be happy to. Well, last
week.
Do
your curveball.
No, I can do this one. Last week we were talking about virtue. Character and virtue is kind of interchangeable.
Right.
So we were talking about virtue. And we weren't talking about virtue like a morally, being morally superior to somebody else.
That
was not what we wanted to convey at all. We wanted to convey the part about virtue that you use it as a measuring stick to clarify your intentions, sort of like training tools for intentions that you can aspire to.
Right.
So we talked about virtue last week.
Kind of like pattern interrupt our habit with a practice that'll illuminate intention.
Yes.
Yeah.
And everybody kind of knows what virtues are. You know, it's patience or compassion, kindness, self-control, regard, respect.
Right.
But we had an example last week. We used speech.
Yeah. We had some good examples, first-person experiences.
Oh, we did. We had some great call-ins and then comments about speech. And so we talked about, and it was kind of interesting. We brought up this adage if we can't control our mouth, there's no way we can hope to control our mind. I think I love that. That's a kicker for me. I like that saying.
It's where the rubber meets the road.
Well, you know, if you don't have any kind of filter, anything comes out of your mouth, and it can be the worst kind of negative, unskillful use of speech. and harmful. There's, you know, we talked about four types of harmful speech.
But I like the idea of being able to start and practice with speech. If we're not ready to go into any formal contemplation or quieting the mind, then we start where we are. And if what we're doing is using intention to speak more harmoniously, honestly, beneficial, timely, that's a great practice.
It is. And because we're kind of, it shouldn't be looked at as like, well, you're hitting a gross form of
no,
intention or contemplation, but yeah. I mean, everybody opens their mouth, believe me. So it's right. It's one of sort of the better qualities to work on.
Right. It has a direct effect on the people around us all the time.
Oh, man, yes. Yeah. Right.
The things we think about and don't mention, they're kind of hidden. But when we open our mouths, we can cause a lot of suffering for others.
Yes. We have that power.
Should we use we or should we use I?
Well, I should say I have that power. I shouldn't lump you into my my camp.
I used to say, pay attention to the pronouns when you practice. When do you use I? When do you use we? And when do you use you? So I started trying to get away from the you because I noticed when I was using the word you, it would always be like I was talking from my high position of coaching. So I learned to use we as I practiced more with it. And then I found that I was hiding behind the we once in a while because I wouldn't throw the I in there. This is why this first-person conversation is so important, even in our own words and the way we relate in our thoughts, because it's that assumption of responsibility.
It is. You own it once you say, I faltered or I...
You know, getting back to this issue of admirable friends, just so we can recap again for newcomers coming into the show. I had a person tell me today when I explained admirable friends to them, and they said, you know, that's a great idea. If everybody would just take care of themselves, this world would be fine. If they could just take care of their own, you know what. Mm. And, you know, that was summing up a lot, you know, meaning that we don't bring garbage on the doorstep.
Right.
You know, we're working, taking personal responsibility for our life, our actions, each one of us. And it really does make a difference. You are helping others because you're not bringing that trash to their doorstep.
Right. No drama, no baggage, no
yeah.
extra stress that they don't need.
Yeah. And it's really what sets this admirable friendship apart because of that unity or common idea of we're all responsible. So that I and that use of that pronoun, it's a pretty big word.
It is. And you were right to stop me.
No, I didn't stop you. I was stopping myself too. So.
Well, no, I'm glad you brought that to life.
Because we can hide behind the we.
Because
it's the tone of the we too. Because the we can become like a you if you're toning it not sincere.
Yeah. And like misery loves company kind of we. Well,
yeah. Yeah.
We
really should do it this way.
Yeah, we should. You're right, buddy.
We should speak better. No, you should speak better. I should speak better. Okay. Sorry.
Well, wait a minute. So, did you want to start something else? Or do you want, can I just?
No.
Well, I just kind of wanted to just clarify what we were talking about, harmful speech. And unless you don't, do you think it's necessary? Do you think everybody knows?
No, I think speech is great. You can keep going with it if you like.
Well, I know that after mentioning it last week, I was more conscious of it this week.
Go ahead.
During the week building up. So I know that just bringing it to the forefront was really good
for
me.
In your own practice.
It was. It was very good for me in my own practice. I think I was more conscious of it during my work week. And I'm really high on the skillful speech.
Yeah. It's a practice all by itself. Everybody relates to it.
Well, only because you said it was so powerful. And that's why
we have a direct impact.
Absolutely.
And we know not only are we hurting someone else, you know also that you hurt that other person when you said the words. Maybe not immediately.
Well, because that's one of the four types of harmful speech, isn't it? It's a harsh speech, the one that's intent on hurting somebody else.
The divisive speech is kind of hidden. That gets hidden in society.
Like same with the idle chat. Or rifts between people. That's a little more seductive and manipulative, you know. So... lies, I think everybody knows the intent on misrepresenting the truth.
Yeah, but you know, we think a lie, we think it's really hard. But I thought it was interesting listening to the Senate hearings this week when they called up Dr. Oz on claims that are being made by the diet store. you know, the diet shows. Yeah. And they just, you know, I think it was Claire McCaskill from Missouri, the senator, just took him to task and said, well, why do you need to say these things? Like this pill that you lose 50 pounds with. Why do you need to do that? He was speechless.
Huh. Really?
Yeah. She put him right on task, you know. I heard it in replay. I wasn't listening to the Senate hearings live, but it's like, why? You're a doctor. Why do you have to say those things? Why do you bring it onto your show? And she said it in a really pleasant way, not in, you know, kind of an adversarial, prosecuting way. And he was stumped.
Was it more like a parent to a child, you know? Yeah. Like,
no, it was actually inquisitive. You know, it was like an honest inquisition. And he didn't know what to say. Because he wasn't really being put on as cross-examined. He was almost on as a witness for poor diet claims, like his show was a higher order than anybody else's. But when they replayed a lot of the stuff that's on his show, it's just all of these subtle little things, these little twisted representations that are being made. And it's like, so, you know, when we talk about lies, there are a lot of lies in our society.
Do you think there's a gradient of lies? There's like the little white lie, the little fib, then there's the flat out, you know, lies or?
Yeah, well, I think our mind can twist it any way we want. But again, I bring the context up, not as an excuse that we should spend a lot of time thinking about what other people say or what lies, but in the context of how that does affect all of us. It's in our environment, and these words all make an impression on us, and, you know, almost to a point where you believe the claims. And why aren't I losing weight? Other people must be losing weight, type of thing. Yeah. Well, what if they're not?
That opens up a whole, that's a real, yeah.
Yeah, so it affects everybody, and it affects our speech.
Well, that's interesting that you brought that up. I had no idea that he was into that.
Yeah.
And just briefly, the last thing about negative, harmful speech is idle chatter, which is like the gossip part, which has no purposeful intent at all. It's just out there, you know, talking for the sake of talking, which has no redeeming qualities whatsoever. Hmm. So, I don't know. What do you think about that?
None. No redeeming qualities whatsoever.
I knew you'd say that. And then we have the skillful speech, which you said is like a gift when it's said with to somebody with a great deal of, when it's delivered with sincerity and honesty and authenticity.
Yes.
So that's and I think people have experienced when they've said something to somebody in a genuine way, how the recipient has taken it as a, you know, that's a very nice thing, or no one's ever said that to me before. Or, what was it? Refresh my memory. Was it your mom that was talking to us about, she said they were out with somebody or they were out somewhere and she, was it a waitress or somebody that was, she said something to them and the woman said, oh, no one's ever said that to me before. Do you recall that story?
Yeah, I vaguely do. Yeah, and it was taken really
and,
nicely.
And she conveyed it to us. She said, I was just so struck how the girl just was, she said, just the look on her face and the way she said it back to me, it's like I had handed her just a pot of gold. It was just the nicest thing that she had ever heard. Clearly it was because of her reaction. Which is kind of sad in a sense that if you don't hear it often, it comes as a shock.
Yeah.
You know, when someone doesn't convey a feeling in a genuine, authentic way, the recipient doesn't really know how to react to it.
They don't.
You know.
You know, you mentioned you kicked your practice into gear this week with speech. Was it on the positive or the negative side? Were you withholding, you know, kind of restraining speech?
Both.
Both?
I think I was just more aware of the spoken word this week, which I really...
So you got something from the show.
Sorry?
You got something from the show.
I did, believe it or not. I got something from the show. So, anyways, I digress here. I've pretty much taken up too much time recapping, so. Sorry about that. But I really do like the speech part. I really think it's powerful. I think it's, like you said, you know, the three measurements are, is it timely, is it beneficial?
Truthful.
And truthful.
I usually go the truthful first, the beneficial second, and the timely last for me is what I kind of process in my head with my intention behind.
Is there a reason? I mean, do you think it should be done that way normally?
My tendency is to have bad timing, so I kind of make that the last check on things.
Okay, I getcha. I just didn't know whether there was a method to the madness. Or...
I guess it just works for me. You know, I've worked with it enough that order, I run it through my head and kind of think of scenarios when it's time to speak or not speak, if I'm in a meeting or in a conversation. That's
truthful, really beneficial time.
Yeah.
Okay.
That'll TBT. Work. I've got it right on my computer.
Do you really?
Yeah.
What, like a label maker on the top?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, especially if you're on a phone conversation for a business. Or,
well, that's a nice prompt. Yeah, a mindfulness kind of bell going up there.
Sitting there looking right in the face.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. I might have to do that tomorrow when I go back into the office.
So,
should we get
let's get into the body of persistence, which is the last truth quality. It's in the category of a truth quality.
It is.
And persistence, and some people, you know, another one of the mind qualities is endurance. But to separate endurance from persistence, I like to use persistence as an analogy would be effort.
Okay.
You know, the effort. And the definition that we put on this mind quality, this ideal mind quality, that again, we're practicing these in order to build these mind qualities and shift our conversation from external events during the day to what's happening in the inner world, and with the hope that, again, we are having progress in our inner world, and that's how we judge our happiness, is more of our inner qualities being built. So, again, the context of this persistence is how are we living more reliably happy by building persistence. Persistence in what? You know, persistence as applied to being persistently practicing the 10 ideal mind qualities.
That makes sense.
Okay. So we have to have context with persistence and our efforts. You know, we're not talking about once you build effort towards the inner mind qualities, and I have found that efforts relating to normal everyday activities happen quite automatically because it's a much higher effort to master the mind than it is to master breaking, you know, small habits, because it's much harder effort. So if you set those goals high towards the mind quality and being persistent with your energy and effort, and learning how to balance that energy and effort, it's amazing how that effort spills over into other areas of your life. I have found that.
Well, that's interesting because you really do want the persistence to be going in the right direction. The effort. To be placed in the right spot. I think, was it Covey, correct me if I'm wrong, that said something about putting a ladder against the wrong wall?
Yes, that's a perfect example. I'm glad you covered that because I think energy that's dissipated has no value to it. So it has to be focused, but it also has to be focused in the right direction. So you kind of look at that quality of persistence has to first have the right context of where it's pointed. And that's why I wanted to relate it to the 10 ideal mind qualities or living reliably happy. Mm-hmm. So we want to be persistent in practicing and developing ourselves as it relates to living reliably happy. So that's the point in the context of this persistence.
So we want to be persistent in practicing goodwill. Let's go to the previous mind qualities. So we want to be persistent in being authentic,
yes.
Exhibiting goodwill. We want to be persistent in discerning between skillful and unskillful.
And let's, instead of say persistent, I think we want to use right effort.
Okay.
Right effort. Because that gets that quality of what you're saying. I don't want to be busy work.
No.
I want this effort, what I am going to use like a laser, I want to be effective.
Efficient and effective.
Efficient and effective. So go back to your list again.
Well, discernment.
What?
Goodwill. Exhibiting goodwill.
I want right effort to be persistent. So that's why this learning all of these conceptually is very important as it relates to discernment. What does that mean to use right effort to discern? I have to do some studying and I have to do some practicing because I want to do it the right way.
Absolutely. And you have to give yourself space between the thought and the action. I mean, if you knee-jerk something, obviously that's not using good discernment and being persistent or showing an effort.
The right effort. Well, let's compare the right effort for a moment with a skill like a carpenter.
Okay.
Would that effort be best directed if it was working as an apprentice under a master carpenter?
Absolutely.
Right. Because the advice would be on point, the experience would be there, so the effort would be well applied. Whereas somebody could go try to learn it all by themselves without any skill, any concepts, no association with admirable friends. And then they wake up one day and say, I have no energy for this. Right? So energy is just by itself is nothing. When it's applied energy and it's the right kind of energy and effort, that's a quality we have to understand. And that's why I'm trying to make the point that we have to apply it towards reliable happiness. So when we're thinking about persistence, it's not just how do I get more persistent in my diet or how do
it's not like a dog with a bone without, very myopically focused and just.
If you can learn to master the stresses in your day and turn them around and build those inner mind qualities, then I submit that the other things that you'll try to do will come a lot easier. Does that sound reasonable?
It does.
You're looking at me with a question.
Almost like in an eerie, scary kind of yes kind of way.
Well, that's that strategic side that says you've got to have a point of it.
You're throwing that strategic up. You know that's on my bottom 34 or whatever.
Bottom five. Bottom 34. If somebody from Gallup was hearing that, bottom 34.
Well,
oh boy.
That's okay. I'm not a Gallup certified anything, so that just proves the point.
Okay, so point number one relating to this effort or persistence is that it's applied towards reliable happiness.
And you know, why would you be persistent towards reliable happiness?
It's
like a no-brainer when you say it that way.
Well, if you want to be reliably happy. But the thing...
No, I want to put all my efforts into be miserable. I want to be just persistently miserable.
Before we go on break, the other thing I want to say, what precedes persistence or what precedes effort has got to be some form of faith or conviction in the process that you're going to do. That precedes the effort. In other words, the carpenter, getting back to the analogy, has faith or conviction that he can become a good carpenter, right? As he becomes an apprentice.
Yes, as he's honing his skills. That makes sense.
So this is kind of a catch-22 argument that you have to, we're trying to talk about reliable happiness, and people are generally not reliably happy. They're reliably miserable, right? Stress is everywhere. It's abound. So you're asking for a conviction in a process that they haven't even begun yet. But it's necessary. It precedes good effort, right effort. So how do we get conviction in a process?
Well, you have to start. You just...
Right, but, you know, what's really interesting about this, and this is what I like when we first were learning from the nuns when we started practicing, they said to us, just try this. See if it works. And if it works, use it. If not, because they never questioned our faith, which was important to me.
Yes.
They just said, this form of living, give it a try, put it to the test, and if it works, keep it. If not, throw it away. That was a huge invitation to me for turning my energy in that direction. If they had said that, it absolutely will work, that I would have, at that time in my life, I'd have said, yeah, another snake oil salesman.
Right.
There had to be some level of conviction or faith in the process, or you'll have no energy towards it. So we have to remember that.
And they knew that personal experience was where it's, you can't, it was like, you can't believe in it until you experience it. You're not just, you know, yes, there's faith, there's that leap of faith, but there's also that extra that comes with the experience.
Yes, but this is like the I need the job. No, I have to have the job first. I need the experience. You know, it's a catch-22. So what I was trying to pass on to our listeners, because I know they're all trying to kind of curious about this reliable happiness thing that we're talking about. How do you get started with this? How can I show some energy and some effort? What is it I'm going to believe in? And we're not asking them to believe in anything. What I'm suggesting is, from a divine standpoint or from a representation of you or I, what I learned from the nuns was the concept of a working hypothesis. And then it made sense because every scientist has a working hypothesis. So in other words, you make the assumption going in that it will work.
So you're talking about life's experiment.
Yes. And that starts the engine. That's the spark plug that'll get our effort in the right direction. And again, when people turn to me and say, I tried it this week and it didn't go, is there conviction in the process? Well, conviction in what process? Well, let's sit down and talk about reliable happiness. Let's talk about your life. And let's talk about the stresses you're incurring and whether this is something you really want to do or something that you hope for. Does it? You know, I've looked at people talk to us, Carol, and say, I really want to live authentically.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen that before, haven't
you?
Face to face. So now, okay. And then you make the case why it's important to take it on an assumption, a working assumption. See if this process works for you, if it does continue.
And it is a process. It's not one of these say it today, have it tomorrow.
No, it's a process.
It's a process.
But it's not a divine faith or blind faith that says, you just got to believe me because I said it is. And here I'm representing to you that I'm living happily and reliably happy. No, this process has helped improve my life. Over time, it works, but you have to apply it for yours as well. First of all, you've got to want it.
Right.
So if you want it, it's an important thing to you to live reliably happy. So use it as a working hypothesis. Don't take it on faith.
I think that's a good point.
Okay. And it proceeds in the wheel, which we'll talk about later. And let's take a break for a moment so we can reflect on that wheel when we come back.
We've got a whole lot more to talk about, I guess.
More to talk about, but let's take a moment.
Okay.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is, what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
We're back. We are talking tonight with our admirable friends about persistence.
Yes, effort. So now, we talked about applying it towards reliable happiness.
Yes.
Second point, why don't you cover the second point?
I don't like the second point.
All right, I'll cover the second. It needs to be guided by discernment. So energy, like you said before, because you kind of said it in your example, it's got to be smart, effective. Well, persistence is the wisdom quality. I mean, discernment is the wisdom quality that tells us how to apply energy. Or that effort. So it can't be by itself without a wise approach.
And I know the little caveat is the, making the mistakes without the personal guilt or remorse. And I think that's my problem with persistence because
With discernment, you mean?
Well, I'm going back now.
Okay.
Because I find that, and maybe you didn't want to talk about this now and you wanted to wait for it later, but this was like my biggest bugaboo about persistence and apathy. I tend to be more on the apathetic side than the persistent side. And I don't, maybe because it's the fear of failure when you get persistent and then you don't take it all the way or you don't continue with it.
Right.
So that's my little thing with persistence.
Interesting.
I think I measure it. I use a measuring stick for persistence. Like I'm not persistent enough, you know. Maybe you don't. Is it because you don't care, or is it like what's kind of holding you back?
One thing I noticed, in your eyes when we were talking here, is when I talked about the one thing to work on would be reliable happiness. Could it be that you might be trying to be persistent in too many areas in your life?
No, not me.
Because if you can simplify this,
I know.
You know what I'm saying? Then you maybe your energy is being drawn because you're trying to do too much.
That could be. You could have hit the nail on the head right there.
I'm ferreting back what I see and what I hear from you, but that's.
Well, I think.
Oh, we have a caller coming in, so why don't we take the call?
It's wonderful.
Mary Ellen on line one. Mary Ellen, welcome to Admirable Friends.
Hi, Mary Ellen.
Thanks. Hey, it's great to talk to you guys.
How are you?
I can't tell you how much I've missed these conversations.
Oh, this is Mary Ellen from Arizona, Mary
Yes.
Ellen.
Yeah.
Well, we miss having the conversations with you as well.
How does it sound?
Thank you.
How does it sound to you?
It sounds great. It's great. I've listened to the archived ones as well, and it's been great. And thanks for the shout out on episode 2. There was some donut talk.
Oh yeah, that's right. There was some Mary Ellen was around.
Yeah.
Well, it's great to hear from you.
Well, it's really good to talk to you guys as well. You were talking about persistence, and I was thinking about that because I've worked really hard on goodwill, and it's taken a lot of persistence to not say some of the thoughts that go through my head on occasion, and then to stop myself, to be able to stop myself, and then think, you know, wish somebody goodwill, wish the best for somebody in a moment that just a second ago I wanted nothing of the sort for that person. And so it really has, but what I find now is that happens less and less, and I'm more automatically going to those well wishes for people.
Oh, wow.
And kind of bypassing, you know?
So what you said was, if I heard you correctly, was ill will was your practice. So you caught yourself with ill will in your thoughts, and that was your effort then was applied towards goodwill. So you reciprocated right away with goodwill.
Exactly.
And then you're saying after doing that a while and seeing the benefits, and I'm assuming the benefits in terms of quality of mind and a good feeling for yourself, right?
For sure.
You kept it up, and now you're doing kind of preventative medicine with goodwill before the ill will ever arises.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right. I can't say it always happens.
No, but that's the way the process should work.
It is.
That's the way exactly it should work.
Yep.
That is
so,
the
I thought
the
that was kind
train.
Of timely.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That's a great testimony for someone that's. And I remember when you were in Texas, Mary Ellen, you were a great practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
Persistence was one of your qualities that you exercised. Did you, in talking to Carol, did that make any sense at all, the idea of persistence possibly being more narrowed towards one thing at a time or less things? Do you find that at all
helpful?
Yeah,
absolutely. I have to do it that way. I have to focus on one thing at a time. That's the way my brain works, I guess, but it certainly makes more sense to me to be persistent in one area, and then that kind of becomes the norm, and then you move on to something else.
Yeah.
Kind of hone your skill like a craftsman. You get that under control, and then you go on to the next. I'm going to have to really reflect on that this week about how I spread myself, maybe as far as practicing go, not concentrating.
Well, notice she applied persistence towards goodwill.
Yes.
She didn't apply persistence towards a diet or towards something at work. She applied it towards a quality that gets her reliably happy. Now, on that regard, do you think that helps at all in other aspects of your life? Obviously, you said your mind was happier, but how about persistence in other areas? Do you think there's any spillover?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt. It's very similar. I would probably relate it to when you exercise and you do it every day. You know, it becomes a habit, and that lifestyle bleeds out into maybe your diet. Then you improve your diet once you start working out every day.
And confidence builds.
I just think it's kind of the same way. If I can prove to myself that my persistence and goodwill has paid off, then it gives me confidence that my persistence in other areas will also pay off.
That's that conviction again, gets strengthened.
You bet.
We talked about earlier.
Gets right back to the wheel.
That wheel goes right back to that wheel of conviction, persistence.
Exactly.
Well, that's great to hear. And our hearts go out to you too, Mare. We know you've had a loss lately. And
thank you very much.
Thanks.
I appreciate that.
We think about you often.
Yeah, we do.
Well, I miss you guys terribly.
Well, this is a good way for us to connect.
It is.
This is great.
It is. This is awesome. It's just like old times having these conversations.
It really is. What I'd like to do, you were with us when we started this curriculum about 5 years ago with the golfers,
mm-hmm.
It was it's really evolved, hasn't it?
No, it sure has. It sure has.
Hopefully, it's gotten more simple.
I think it's geared when you talk about persistence and effort in the right direction. I would say this is it.
Oh yeah.
Without a doubt.
I'd like to think so.
Certainly never given up on it.
Yeah. You were one of those that started practicing from day one. You got that reliable happiness, didn't you? From the very beginning. You were just so honest. I remember how honest you were. I just don't want to live this life of what's going on in my head. I said, and I guess when I confessed to you what was going on in my head, you said, that goes on in my head too.
Right. Misery loves company.
Yeah. But we're willing to do something about it, weren't we?
That's right. That's right. And I think we're both better for it, for the effort. Well, and I can tell you, speaking of the loss that I've had recently, I will tell you that it's been... I mean, it's, the experience of losing a parent is, it's a horrible thing, but I'm so grateful that I was able to be there with him and along with my mom and my two brothers. We were all there with him right in the room, and I can honestly say that probably 2 or 3 years ago, I don't think I might have been able to stay in the room. It was excruciating to watch. But now, at this point in my life and the way I live and the way I think, it was the only place I could be. I mean, there was never even a thought to escape, as excruciating as it was and as painful as it was to watch somebody struggle like that for breath and not be able to do anything about it, that would have driven me out of the room easily a few years ago. But thanks to the experience that I've had with you and the practice that I've been doing for this long, thanks to you guys, really made quite a difference. So.
That's wonderful. I'm glad to hear that for you, that you were with that. And it's I watched Carol when her mom passed do the same thing, and it's almost like a bittersweet experience that you know you're there. It's hard, but you're actually glad that you were there. You know,
I did find that I was there in ways that I never thought I would be, and I think that's what I'm hearing you say, Mary Ellen, too. It was a better version of me, a more empowered, and just really seeing everything.
That's that compassion, you know, that compassion, that means, that word is rooted in co-suffering, compassion with other suffering. You know, you were right there, compassionate and experiencing it.
And it's very powerful.
He knew you were there.
And
that's important.
Yeah. I mean, it really was. It was very powerful. It's something that I'll certainly never forget. But I really am grateful that I was there and I experienced it.
Thank you for sharing that, and we're happy. We're happy for you, even in a time of sadness. We will.
Thank you.
We're really happy for
Thanks.
You.
Well, it's great to talk to you guys.
Hey,
thanks for calling in,
Mary.
Take care
of yourself.
We really appreciate it.
You bet.
Hey,
my pleasure.
We'll be going over to New Mexico at the end of July. So if you want to meet us halfway out in the river canoeing, we'll be out closer towards you anyways.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll find one that has water.
There you go. That's right. Well, hopefully it'll get some rain too.
Thanks, Mary Ellen.
Take care.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
That was so cool, she called.
I know.
She's lovely. She's absolutely lovely.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I'm glad because while you two were talking, I don't know, we have a little bit of time to talk about the Committee of the Mind. Because what you were saying, like when you and Mary Ellen were first saying, oh, that goes on in your head? Yeah, that goes on in my head. So do you want to talk about that for a while?
Yeah, we can. Absolutely. But why don't you go ahead? I mean, the Committee of the Mind is something I've been working with for a while. I know there's a lot of voices and a lot of different desires and plans that have been hatched before.
It's like all of those, like, I guess, I mean, this sounds like off your rocker, like all the little voices in your head, but all the conversations that you have, we kind of give them little names or we put them in little compartments or slots, much like if they were board members in a corporation, you know, and they could be tagged like Mr. or miss judgmental.
Right.
Mr.
Fear in her case.
Yes.
That board member wasn't there for her dad. She gave rise to more skillful board members that came out and showed up for her.
Sure.
And she followed those practices and led her that way. But when we first were talking, we talked a lot about the negative voices, you know, the ones that were poor influences.
Right. Or the ones that hijacked the conversation and sort of browbeated us into making a decision that probably in our heart of hearts we knew wasn't the best.
Well, that's why we put apathy in front of persistence here, right? There's a voice of apathy. What's that voice say to you sometimes?
You know,
you don't need to do that.
What's your hurry?
Right. So the trick is to be able to exercise some self-control and to monitor, slow yourself down enough so you can listen to that and kind of shoot holes in that board member's arguments, you know? Yeah, I know. Why are you telling me not to do it? You know, and usually there's not a whole bunch of arguments. It's just a pattern of the past.
Absolutely.
For some reason, you know, there were times where that apathy worked for you and made you happy somewhere in your past. So you just keep going with it.
Sure, you entertain it more.
But it's like a drug. It made you happy in the short term. It might have been that Sunday afternoon that we decided not to work out and you and I got a bag of popcorn and watched a movie, right?
Yeah.
There was a great feeling. Apathy was at work. That board member won for both of us, except it just drained us a little bit. How did it drain us?
Sure, because we knew in our heart of hearts that wasn't the...
But what I'm saying is, there's another Sunday afternoon from there where that board member won a week before, and he's got a fighting chance again the next Sunday. So
absolutely. Once he gets his foot in the door, he knows that you're going to listen to him again.
Yeah, but
so once we entertain all the bad guys, the hustlers, the ones that want to hijack the conversation.
And the thing we have when we practice this way for reliable happiness, towards reliable happiness, is we cultivate that ability to make our free will, which is the chairman of the board in this case,
right,
that can listen to all those voices, arbitrate, say no, develop new ones, and say, look, I'm sick of listening to you, band of thieves. I've got to develop some good qualities.
Or give a voice to the patient ones that are sitting there waiting to be heard, giving them a platform or a voice.
Exactly. So when you talk about those become an important aspect of persistence, because you've got to develop those persistent voices. Because there's a whole lot more going on. So I appreciate you bringing that up, Cal.
It kind of struck me when you and Mary Ellen were talking that you were talking about things that were going on to your head, and I know that we talk about that a lot. And so I just wanted to bring that up.
Okay.
So...
So let's kind of go through the discernment again, how it strengthens persistence in terms of right attitude, right type of effort, and the right amount of effort. There's three ways that the discernment strengthens persistence or right effort.
Okay.
There's ways to develop the right attitude by being heedful. That's a word that's not used a lot.
I don't hear it in my day-to-day conversations.
Well, I used it in this context when I typed the document up because you have to be heedful as it relates to future dangers of getting old and sick.
Right.
Because that's what's one of the reasons why you will be persistent, is because you know that we are not getting any younger. Old age, sickness will be upon us, and those mind qualities are either going to go one way or the other. They're either going to go negatively or they're going to go positively, and you're going to build upon them, and there's going to be more challenges as your life goes on. That's a reality we all face.
Sure.
So one of the attitudes that you can develop is become aware of that, bring that to the forefront, and certainly Mary Ellen's call helped bring that to all of us today. It's not, this is upon us all. So there is no time like the present to keep that energy in gear. So that's one of the skillful ways to develop
the right attitude.
The right attitude. Pride. Why don't you take pride?
I think a lot of us tend to beat ourselves up. So I think we need to have the right attitude in using pride as part of it and taking joy in things that we do well. I think we very rarely give ourselves a pat on the back for a job well done.
Right.
And certainly, if we're looking for it from external means, we'll very rarely get it. So we might as well cultivate the
memory attaboy of when you've done it well.
Absolutely.
And that's another skillful way to develop that attitude towards persistently going forward. It's worked for me before. You can talk to yourself, right?
Right. You know, it's taking pride in things that come, things that you've mastered. Skills you've mastered, or not giving in to temptations.
Well, look at the persistence that you displayed when you were doing your glass work.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Remember how much work you put into that?
And I did.
Quality of work that you did. Those are things you can call upon because you know that you've mastered something in the past. So if you put your mind towards reliable happiness, you could master that just like the grass.
That's true. That's true.
Might
you always
take a
seem
little
to
longer.
Put things that you always seem to put things in perspective for me in a very simple and digestible way. But I don't know. I like the pride part, taking pride in what you do and giving yourself a pat on the back.
Compassion. Mary Ellen just gave us a great example of compassion as a way to develop the right attitude because she's truly wanted to be stress free. And so she has, she's with her suffering. She was with her suffering and with others suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, that becomes a motivator, for being persistent. It all works together.
It does.
So, you know, we're getting tight on time, Carol. Where'd this diet go by?
There's a lot of stuff here.
Yeah.
You know, and it's such an
interesting... Well, good thing we covered this again in 10 weeks from now, because this is one of my favorite. Effort is important, and I enjoy, as we grow older, becoming, you know, really effective effort. You know, I think of Mario Lemieux when he played hockey. He barely skated with any speed, but when he moved, he moved.
Yes, he made things happen.
That's right, effort. And I'd like to close with that thought. Anyone who ever watched Mario Lemieux play hockey, they would see right effort, wouldn't they?
This is true.
You just go back and forth on the blue line waiting for the puck, and then go.
I love it. Can we quickly say before we sign off that if people want to get in touch with us, what is it?
Hello@admirablefriends.org. Hello@admirablefriends.org. Good to be with all of you tonight.
Absolutely. Look forward to everybody meeting us again next Tuesday night, too.
And it was so good to hear from Mary Ellen. But we know the other Admirable Friends are out there.
We do. And we appreciate each and every one of you.
We do. Take care. See you next week.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.